May I have the next slide, please? The matters I have so far discussed concern patent defense against internal members of the community who might defect from the general rule of reciprocity and deploy their patents to create leverage against those who copy, modify, and share. But the Novell and Microsoft deal proved to our community at large what the Free Software Foundation had long claimed, that anti-competitive behavior by a monopolist hostile to free software would likely take the form of an attempt to convert its patents into leverage within the community by way of alliance with some members of the community against others, the use of patents to divide and conquer. Though we originally proposed some general measures to protect against such behavior, the community at large greeted the FSF's initial drafts on this subject with skepticism. Such measures would be powerful, and were they really needed? They might have unintended consequences and serve little purpose, it was said. And then, as though to answer all objections, Microsoft moved, and the parties within whose community we were drafting this license began to see the need for increased security. Before you, you see the most important such measure taken in the GPL3. If, pursuant to or in connection with a single transaction or arrangement, you convey or propagate a covered work and grant a patent license to some of the parties receiving the work, then the patent license you grant is automatically extended to all recipients of the covered work and workspace on it. In plain blunt language, if you are Microsoft and you make a deal with Novell to give patent safety only to some of Novell's customers, then you are actually giving patent safety to all their customers, all the developers, and all of everybody else's customers, too. The effect is to turn the monopolist's intended leverage into protection for the community. May I have the next slide, please? And just in case anybody else thinks that making deals with Microsoft in this form is a good idea, we have added what I think of as the dancing with wolves provision, which says, in blunt language, I give you the less blunt language here, if you make deals with a party having patents to pay tribute to that party in return for protecting some but not all of your customers, if you pay tribute to protect some but not all of your customers, you are violating the license and you must stop distributing altogether. This provision is not retroactive. It does not cover deals made in the past. It covers only deals made after the publication of the third discussion draft of GPL3, and it is designed to prevent the spread of such arrangements as are currently in existence between Microsoft and Novell. These provisions, too, given the conduct that Microsoft engaged in during the GPL3 drafting process, have largely been greeted uniformly with positive response within the GPL community. And as this week's most recent events have shown, there is already cause within the community to celebrate the GPL drafting process as providing further protection against saber-rattling by Microsoft, threatening to disrupt free software production through the invocation of a large inventory of most likely invalid patents. Let me turn then to the last of the major drafting goals of GPL3, that is lockdown. Next slide, please. The problem that DRM causes to free software developers, I should say again, is a problem which arises not because DRM is applied to a movie or to a musical work, but because in pursuit of a technological environment which will protect those digital restrictions, parties in the entertainment industry seek to have consumer electronics and IT manufacturers build devices that consumers cannot modify. IT and CE manufacturers, however, want to use free software because it's cheap, agile, and powerful, and they want to reserve the right to themselves to modify devices after sale, because in the current global commercial environment, devices that are not agile enough to be modified and enhanced after sale are devices that will be expected by their manufacturers to be discarded by consumers in favor of competing, more agile products. So manufacturers are using free software embedded in devices precisely in order to achieve agility and modifiability for themselves. And the goal of GPL3 is to ensure that when a manufacturer makes a device that it can change after sale, the consumer, too, has the equivalent right to modify after sale that the manufacturer has. But for the manufacturers of IT goods in particular, there are classes of goods about which the consumer's right to modify after sale is a problem. And this has to do with the continuing interest of customers, large-scale enterprise customers, in purchasing secure business networks. Networks which resist foreign software, like malware, viruses, and worms, and which protect the data on those networks against transportation outside the business. The consequence is a powerful arrangement within GPL3 to differentiate the concerns of the IT industry from the concerns of the free software community. Next slide, please. What we have ultimately agreed upon is a provision prohibiting lockdown in consumer products, which says, if you convey executables in or with or specifically for use in a user product, which is defined as a thing that people use in their daily lives, consumer products under warranty law. If you convey object code in a user product, and if you have the right as manufacturer to modify that code after sale, you must show the consumer how to do that too. You don't have to do it for every consumer. You only have to do it for consumers who request the source code, which under GPL they have a right to do. So if you buy a cell phone with Linux inside in the future, you should expect a postcard inside the box that says, there's free software in this cell phone. If you want the source code, send us this postcard and the cost of shipping and handling, and we'll send you the source code that's inside your phone. We'll also tell you how you can modify and install updated or changed or hacked versions of that software. Though note that if you modify the software, all bets are off with respect to your warranties, and if your phone misbehaves, we don't have to give you cell phone service on our network. Here, too, we are very pleased to be able to say that we have achieved a broad inter-industry consensus, which for the first time in the history of the DRM wars separates the IT and consumer electronics industries definitively from their sometime partners, sometime frenemies in the entertainment industries. We expect a broad variety of consumer products with GPL software inside, modifiable by consumers, notwithstanding the DRM inside them, to come to market in the next several years. And we believe that that rule of protecting user modifiability will turn out to be a commercial advantage rather than a commercial disadvantage for the manufacturers who have chosen to include GPL software in their works. Now let me just spend one moment before taking questions on the issue of how GPL 3 will actually come into force. May I have, please, slide number 18. GPL version 2 in 1991 took account of the likelihood, indeed the certainty, of future versions of GPL. And GPL 2 therefore contains a rule already in existence, which people have had 15 years to study, concerning how GPL 3 will be adopted. You see the text of that rule before you. If a program under GPL specifies that it is under GPL version 2 or any later version, then anybody who has a copy of that program may choose to use it and pass it along under GPL 3 the moment the license becomes effective. That is to say, not only the copyright holder, but other users as well have rights to relicense particular copies of the code. Only the copyright holder himself or herself can make a definitive move to GPL 3 only. But almost all commercially significant GPL programs currently in circulation are circulated under GPL v2 or any later version, which means that once GPL v2 becomes formally an effective license of the Free Software Foundation, which we expect will happen at the end of next month, it will become possible for all individuals to begin using GPL software, almost all GPL software, under the terms of GPL 3. There are only two significant commercial exceptions, the Linux operating system kernel and MySQL, which both are at present licensed GPL v2 only, and their copyright holders have sole discretion about which license will in future apply to their code. But for the vast bulk of GPL software, transition from one license to the next will be smooth, decentralized, and more or less automatic. That concludes the framed portion of this discussion. I now welcome any questions that you may have.
Thank you, Professor Moglen. We will be taking a question and answer session at the end of the webinar, and I wanted to remind participants that we do have a question and answer button on the left-hand menu of your screen, and if you could please just submit your questions through that method, then we will read them aloud at the end of the webinar. At this time, however, I'd like to introduce Stormy Peters. Stormy is OpenLogic's Director of Community and Partner Programs. She joined OpenLogic from Hewlett-Packard, where she founded and managed the Open Source Program Office. As an early adopter of open source, Stormy was responsible for HP's open source strategy, policy, and business practices. She was also a founding member of HP's Linux division. Stormy is a frequent keynote speaker on business aspects of open source software at major conferences such as the Open Source Business Conference and O'Reilly's conferences. She has addressed the United Nations, European Union, and various U.S. state governments on open source software. Stormy is a co-founder of the nonprofit GNOME Foundation, which is based on open source principles to encourage the development of a computing platform comprised of free software for use by the general public. And now Stormy Peters.
Thanks, Linda. To those of you in the audience who have questions for Eben, I will keep this short, hopefully short as my intro. So I just wanted to talk, OpenLogic brought this webinar to you because our whole goal is to enable enterprises to safely and securely acquire open source software, manage it in their enterprise, and control it. And we realized that a lot of people had questions about GPL version 3, and that's why we're here. So what we do is we understand that enterprises want to use open source software. There's a lot of savings, a lot of faster time to market, a lot of reasons for enterprises to be using open source software, but there's a lot of uncertainty and risks that come up. And so our goal is to address those and to make it easy for enterprises to use open source software. So we go through the open source software that's out there. We evaluate it, we test it, we certify it, and we provide a tested and certified library of 250 open source software applications for enterprises enterprises to use, and then we give them the tools to manage that in their enterprise, know what's installed where, when there's new versions, and actually install it and integrate it, you know, with minimal technical problems, and thereby enabling enterprises to use open source software effectively, save money, get to market faster, whatever their goals were in using open source software. So I wanted to address some of the legal issues that we help with when we help with open source software. So first, we help enterprises discover what they're using. We often find that many CIOs or CTOs know that they're using open source software. They're okay with that, but they don't really know what all they're using. So we have a discovery tool that runs on systems, either developer systems, IT systems, production systems, and generates a report of what's installed, what open source software is actually installed. Then we provide some policies and approval processes so they can say, I don't want any GPL licensed software on my systems, or I do want GPL licensed software, but I want you to send an email to this attorney every time it's used. Or we could say, you know, Fred's team is allowed to use GPL version 3 software, but Mike's team is not because they're shipping stuff to outside people and we don't want to open source our code at the moment. Then we have an audit, so you can see which licenses are installed in your software and where, and who installed them, and who approved it, and you can see the license text. Your attorney can say, generate a report of all of the licenses used in my enterprise, and show me the license text so that I can evaluate it. And then finally, we help address some of the legal risks associated with using open source software, kind of put people's mind at ease. So we offer full indemnification for all of the 250-plus products in our library, and that indemnification covers patents, copyrights, trademarks, and trade secrets, and it's at no additional cost if you've bought our solution. So I will move to the last slide before we get to the questions here. So why choose OpenLogic? To reduce the total cost of using open source software. So not only do you get all the advantages of using open source software, but it's cheaper for you to do it because we've addressed these problems for many enterprises. Make your staff more productive. They're going to use open source software that makes them more productive. They'll be able to use it with less problems. To make sure that you're compliant with all of the licenses, and to make sure that your policies are being put in place and that they're being followed. And then finally, to have a single source of support, both a knowledge base and a technical support for all of the open source software that you use in your enterprise. So with that, I will open up to questions for Evan. If you can go to the left-hand side, you'll see a question button. If you can click that, type in your questions, and I will be reading them out for Evan. Since we have over 100 people on the phone, we're not going to open the lines. So please type in your questions, and we'll get them answered here. So first question for you, Evan, is how do you address concerns about consumers' communication safety that have been addressed for enterprise users in the DRM provisions?
Well, the question, I think, basically means, do we have to worry that consumers are going to modify their hardware in such a way as either to turn it into a brick or to injure the networks over which they communicate? So far as we're concerned, preserving people's right to hack on the computers that they own is preserving a right which 99.9% of users never need and aren't threatened by. Those people out there who want to modify their cell phone so it works differently are a rare and unusual breed, but what they make, other people may discover they want to share. What we believe is that we're protecting the material of ordinary daily life as platforms for user innovation. We think that user innovation emerging from user communities is the primary source of innovation in the 21st century economy, not centralized innovation emerging from factories or engineering groups. Therefore, what we think we're really doing, rather than worrying consumers with dangers, is providing the innovative components in society, whether it is 9-year-olds in their homes or 20-year-olds in their schools, with an opportunity to make the innovations that everybody else will profit from later on. We think that 21st century R&D is an activity engaged in by creative and daring people. And they know who they are, and if they turn their cell phone into a brick, they're perfectly prepared to regard that as their problem.
Okay, thanks. Once GPL version 3 goes into effect, will further transactions by Novell and Microsoft under their deal be in violation of this, or will their deal still be considered under GPL 2 or earlier?
Novell's activity will be protected by the fact that it was complete as of the date in November, which is the effective date of their deal with Microsoft. Microsoft's activity will begin to disperse patent defenses into the community. When GPL3 goes into effect, every Microsoft coupon handed to somebody, which results in the shipment of a Novell Server Edition product to that coupon holder, will result in a conveyance of broad patent defenses to parties throughout the community. The goal of this provision was to incent Microsoft to get out of the patent deal with Novell. Microsoft, which fully understands what we are doing and why we are doing it, has elected instead not to withdraw from the deal with Novell, but to throw coupons wholesale out of airplanes. You have been watching for months as Microsoft gave away these coupons, which were supposed to be valuable to Microsoft and for which it paid a lot of money, as though the coupons themselves were hot, as indeed they are. All of this giving away coupons activity by Microsoft is meaningless and useless. The coupons have no expiration date, and Microsoft can be sure that some coupons will be turned into Novell in return for software after the effective date of GPL3. Once that has happened, patent defenses will, under the license, have moved out into the broad community and be available to anybody whom Microsoft should ever sue for infringement. Our goal, in other words, is to add one more layer of probable defense against the Microsoft patent aggression, which Microsoft has just been busy thumping its tub about this week. So, in summary, Novell will be protected for the long haul, and Microsoft will be endangered for the long haul by GPL3, and that's as it should be.